You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello and welcome back to the only 7-star wrestling radio show on planet Earth. This is Indie Wrestling Radio. I am the Sly One, Jordan Fox, and with me today is your Floyd and Savior, Mr. Floyd Johnson Jr. Floyd, what's going on, brother?
Man, I couldn't be doing better if I was flying. Man, I got a bunch of stuff in the mail over the last couple of days, a bunch of t-shirts and collectibles and from Pro Wrestling Tees, so I am doing really well.
Can we talk about everything that you got? Because, see, I live vicariously through you when it comes to wrestling merchandise, I guess we would say. I've only got, like, maybe 5 wrestling shirts, man. So run me through what you got.
Okay, so I got two Cody Rhodes shirts because he's my favorite wrestler. One's got my life motto on it, spend it now, make more later. The other one is got.
I love that. Sorry.
Yeah, it's his motto. It's my motto. I'm pretty sure it's a way for him to get other people to buy his merch. Just saying that. The other is the Young Bucks when they kicked Kenny Omega, and they said they chose me and Big Caps. So I got that. Okay, like I said, I'm a big Cody Mark. So got those two. And then I got two new. I believe they were WWE shirts. Why is my brain? I buy so much stuff. I freeze up or something. I'm like, because it was like they did a discount day, and I bought two new shirts. Who did I buy? I honestly don't know. I got some. The Young Bucks have this shoe company called Super Kicks where they make customized shoes. They're like Converse, but you know, but they're called under the Super Kicks brand. And this their third pair of shoes they put out were Cody Rhodes was the third pair, and I just got those. It takes about 3 weeks for them to ship out, so that showed up. So and with those two, since. You get two gifts from Pro Wrestling Tees. So I got a Demolition sign photo and a Papa Shango sign photo.
Wow.
So, I thought that was pretty cool.
That's what's up, dude. I dig it, man.
Yeah, it was good orders or good lucha things as my, as the lucha house party says.
Good lucha things, is that what you said?
Yeah, they say good thing. So,
well, I love it.
Yeah, I was gonna say I got two more shirts. I literally don't remember what they are. So someone bought them for me.
Well, I absolutely love it, man. I want to give a quick shout out to everyone listening to the show this morning. If you're friends with me on social media, or if you follow me on Instagram, on Twitter, or if you're friends with my private account on Facebook, you probably seen that we've had a sharp increase in listenership the last week, and I just want to say thank you to all the people that's been with us since the beginning, the people that's been with us for a while, and all the newcomers. Just want to say I appreciate it very, very much. I want to think of a name for our group, there for everyone that tunes in, maybe the Mad World or Weird Nation or something. I want to think of something to reference everyone, because I don't like the word listeners, and I don't look at myself as someone that has fans or anything like that. Like maybe we can reference everyone that tunes into the show, the Mad World or something like that. I don't know. But maybe that's something that you can help me think of in the near future, Floyd. But
I will definitely think on that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I will be working on my wrestling blog. It's called the Indie Wrestling Diaries, and it's exclusively on thechairshot.com. I will be working on that today as well, so tune in for that. If you follow me on social media anywhere, if you follow the show on social media anywhere, I will be putting that out all over social media today, so you'll get a sense of what it was like for me when I first went from fan to employee in air quotes, the business, in the wrestling business, and what it felt like, what it meant to me, and what it still means to me. So be on the lookout for that today. And now, I think that's everything for us, or for me anyway. We're going to start off with some SmackDown, and then we're going to review the first 3 days in the New Japan Pro Wrestling G1 Climax. But before we start all that, Floyd, I'd like you to tell everyone out there in the Mad World or Weird Nation, everyone out there that's got earbuds in right now listening to the show, tell everybody where they can find you. Tell them about your show. Tell them every little bit that you want to tell them, my man.
All right. So you can find me on Around the Ring, okay. And that is on Facebook and Twitter. It's the exact same, Around the Ring, okay. Our show drops every Sunday. Generally, we try to get it out before noon, but, you know, life happens. Right now, we're running a little contest on our Twitter and Facebook where we're trying to come up with a tagline. Trying to come up with a tagline for our show. So what we like you to do is listen to the show, try to get a feel of it, and then come up with a tagline. If you do, you get a free shirt from either WWE.com or ProWrestlingTees.com. And it ends at the end of the month. So I look forward to any suggestions you might have. And I believe that's it for now. I got more stuff coming up. And as I do the show more, I will be throwing that stuff out there.
I absolutely love it, man. I absolutely love it. So
now I remember what I got. I got a Chase Owens shirt and the actual Young Buck shirt that says Super Kick Party.
Oh, I absolutely love it, man. I love it. I want to, I love the Super Kick Party shirt. I want to get the one that says Cease and Desist. Shout out to my boy Jeremy Donovan. He has that shirt. He's,
wearing that shirt right now.
You are?
I am literally wearing that shirt. It is hilarious that you brought that up.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I could send you a picture. I am wearing that shirt right now.
That is freaking awesome, dude. And we didn't even plan like, that. There's no video. We're audio only today.
They're like, seriously, I have 170 wrestling shirts.
Yeah.
And you bring up the one shirt that I happen to be wearing.
That's awesome, dude. I absolutely love it. I love it. But I do want that, and I like it to Jeremy Donovan for bringing that shirt to my attention. I could never give Jeremy Donovan enough shout-outs. He and the young boy, Josh, are hosts of Keeping It Strong Style, which is a New Japan Pro Wrestling-themed podcast, and it is part of the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Jeremy is the owner and CEO and runs socialsuplex.com, and he is the one that gave me my start. He helped me get my foot in the door in this crazy business. My first article I ever written was for him. I had just started podcasting when I met him. He's a phenomenal guy. Like I said, he gave me my start. He gave Marvelous Mike Moore, one of the hosts of Indie Wrestling Radio, he allowed Mike to get his foot in the door as well with letting him author his first article on socialsuplex.com as well. So if anybody has a desire to write, anybody that wants to listen to multiple badass podcasts, you need to check out Social Suplex Podcast Network on iTunes or wherever else that you listen to podcasts, and socialsuplex.com. Two of my favorite shows. This is the last thing I'll say about them. I know that I'm always mentioning Social Suplex, but it's because I truly believe in what they're doing. Two of my favorite podcasts out there today is One Nation Radio, and that is with Rich Latta, who is not only is he a columnist at Social Suplex, but he also works at Lords of Pain. And then Keeping It Strong Style with Jeremy and Josh, which is where I get all of my New Japan news. And both of those shows, like I said, on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. So be sure and check them out. Let's get to SmackDown, bro. What do you say?
Let's get to it.
So what did you think of this past week's SmackDown? You give it a thumbs up, thumbs down, B+, fucking
definitely
F?
Definitely thumbs up. And I don't know if it's just hilarious because sometimes I wonder if SmackDown just looks so good because at times Raw is so average.
Yeah.
You know, like this week, I wasn't really high on Raw, and then SmackDown to me was like amazing, and it started like from the very beginning.
Yeah, I absolutely, I concur, as the young kids these days say, my friend, I concur. We start off with SmackDown with a limo arriving, and who did you think this was going to be in this limo?
I thought it was going to be Stephanie and Triple H to announce that Evolution thing. I thought they were going to do it on SmackDown too, and I thought it was going to break my brain, and it was not them.
Yeah, that's actually exactly who I thought it was too. I thought it was going to be Stephanie or Triple H. Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, the McMahons have burned it into WWE fans' brains that most of the time, if you see a limo, it's probably going to be a McMahon family member popping out of it, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. But it is not the McMahons. It is actually my man, The Miz, his wife Maryse, and then Maryse jumps back in and pulls out Miss Monroe Skye, their newborn baby. Obviously the Miz and Maryse and Monroe are there to push for,
there's no better way, push or promote.
Yeah, promote is the word I'm looking for. Yeah, promote. They're looking to promote their new, Miz and Mrs., which is a reality TV show. It's so funny because me and you share thoughts on reality television. I messaged you, I can't remember if it was yesterday morning when I was watching SmackDown. I asked you if you were going to watch the show, and you said, I fucking hate reality TV. And
yes,
I absolutely agree with you. I fucking hate it, but I am going to have to check out Miz and Maryse, or Miz and Mrs., just because I love The Miz that much. But I can tell you right now that I do not see it being much different than Total Divas, Total Bellas, the Newlyweds back in the day, any of that bullshit. I think it's going to be the same. The only reason I'm going to give Miz and Maryse a chance is because I love The Miz that much, and I love the fact that he took a weird way to get into wrestling. Like, he had to hustle to get into wrestling by way of reality TV back in the day. And I respect him for that, and I respect everything he's doing now. So I'm gonna check out the reality show. I'm gonna give him my Nielsen rating at least one time, man. Are you not gonna watch it at all, Floyd?
I am not gonna watch it at all. And let me point out this, and I'm not gonna go too long on it. Leave it short point. The Miz is the walking hypocrisy of celebrity. Okay, he said.
Why is
he
that?
He said. They asked why did he move from California to Austin. He says, because people knew where I lived. We were one of the stops on the This Is Where Celebrity Lives. So they they moved to Austin to get more privacy, but then decided to put their whole life on a reality TV show. Is that not a contradiction?
Yeah, I think when you put it like that, it very much so is is a contradiction.
I'm too popular, but let me do this TV show showing you about my life. So, I want privacy, but nope, I'll give up my privacy if you pay me enough.
Yeah. Now,
yeah, so,
I mean, but
my hat to him, make his money. I'm not hating on him.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
just not gonna watch it. I mean, I watch it. I give enough money to WWE. Like I said, WWE could be a dependent. That's how much money I give to them. So, me not watching just one show is not any type of act of rebellion. It's just, I'm not a reality TV fan. I can count on my hands the amount of Total Bellas, Divas, all of the reality shows combined I've watched. It's just not my thing. just like some people don't like wrestling.
Yeah, I get that. About the Miz thing, I was listening to Going in Raw the other day, and they actually said something similar to that. But I think it was Larson that actually said, well, to be honest, a bunch of wrestlers are moving to Texas, specifically Austin, because of, even though it's, you know, it's kind of a bigger city, but it's, I mean, not in terms of like Los Angeles, but it's still a decent sized city. The city of Austin is, but it's like got a very small hometown feel. And
yeah. It's like, and it's a hipster city.
Exactly. And that, I think that fits Miz and Maurice to a T. I know
festivals and most, I'm pretty sure they're not living in Austin proper. They're probably in Round Rock or one of the really rich suburbs around Austin.
Yeah, yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it. And, you know, so I used to live down there. I used to live right outside of Austin just a little bit, about 40 minutes outside of Austin. And I spent a lot of time in Austin, spent a couple years going to South by Southwest. It was absolutely amazing. But anyway, back to what I was saying, Going in Raw was talking about all the people that have moved in around the Austin area in the last several years. And I need to go re-listen to that show because I cannot remember all of them that moved, that live around in the Austin area or in Texas. But, you know, there's no state income tax, which is a big deal because that's, you know, I mean, that could be 6 to 15% of your paycheck extra that you get. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I'll let you in. But anyway, I was just going with that. The other thing that I was going to say is, you know, you and I know that in reality TV, they're probably, that show is in kayfabe, I guess, in TV world. It is supposed to be following them 24/7. But you and I know that they probably get together and do all of that recording, you know, in a month's time, and it'll be an entire season. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's faker than wrestling.
Yeah, it is. It is. Oh, dude, I don't use the F word. It is. It is more. It's more choreographed than wrestling will ever be.
No, well, let me say this. It's fake. Wrestling is scripted.
Okay, that's a good way to put it. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. I like it. I like
wrestling,
it.
Wrestling, at least tells you, hey, we're a TV show. They call themselves reality TV, and like, there's nothing real about it.
I love it. I absolutely love it, man. But anyway, back to the show. So, the Miz, Maurice, and the baby girl, Monroe Sky, are there to promote their new show about them moving to Austin. I guess the first episode is about them moving to Austin. Then we cut to inside the arena, and Randy Orton comes to the ring. After I listened to this, and I wish I would have printed off a transcript to the promo, but after, I'm not a Randy Orton fan. I've never been a Randy Orton fan. I think now that I'm training, I appreciate it a lot more. But I used to, 2 years ago, a year ago, I could not stand his somewhat traditional style of in-ring work. You know what I mean? Like, there's not a lot of, like, you know, I was really getting into the modern strong style of wrestling. And I didn't fully appreciate it. I was wondering why he was winning the Royal Rumble, why he was getting a world title run at this stage of his career, and blah, blah, blah. And now that I'm training in the ring, I really appreciate his style of work. And after this promo last night, or when I watched it Wednesday morning, I texted a member of the show, Marvelous Mike Moore, who is a huge Randy Orton fan. I texted him and I said, that promo just turned me into a Randy Orton fan. That was one of the coolest promos ever, man. He said, one of the things he said was, you people don't respect me because I didn't pay my dues in front of 200 people at a bingo hall. I learned from the very best in the world. And then he said, I started off my career as the Legend Killer. He said, I didn't steal some sweet hand gesture, talking about the Young Bucks and the Elite doing the Too Sweet, the NWO slash click hand gesture. And then he said that the letters RKO were the three most feared letters in all of wrestling. What a cool fucking promo, man. What a cool promo. What did you think about that?
I clearly stated that as a person that I would say is not a good promo, this is Randy Orton's best promo of his career.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, the best of his career? Really?
Yeah. Oh, it's not even close either.
When he come to prominence, when he was getting all his world title wins in 2003-ish, up until 2014, I had really fallen out, or maybe closer to 2006 to 2014. I'd really fallen out of my fandom, so I missed the prime of his career.
And let me tell you, a common problem with him, talking Stone Cold, all the podcasts, is that he couldn't promo. That he couldn't get over on the mic.
Really?
I mean, he's a million-dollar looks, smoothest person they've ever seen in a ring, but he sucked on the mic, basically.
Wow.
You know, it was just basic. It wasn't even that he sucked. It was that he was all right. He just, you know, wasn't that next-level mic guy. And this was a next-level promo. This was a heel promo. But the biggest part that I liked about it is it was his promo. If you've pieced together his last tweets for the last 2 years, that was that promo. That was like, if you follow Randy Orton on Twitter, if you're one of the internet nerds like I am, you know everything he said in that is exactly how he feels.
That's true. How long ago was it? It wasn't too long ago that he was getting into it with some indie wrestlers and calling them
Will Ospreay.
Oh, was it Will Ospreay that he got into
about
with?
About the dive, because he has that shirt that says dive on it, because Rip Rogers put out a an Instagram post, and he said basically every indie match is the same, and he just kept ending it with dive. And then Randy Orton retweeted it, and he basically like just said, damn right. And then for some reason, because Rip Rogers is not anyone, I mean, in the wrestling business, he's a big deal, but in
who
general,
is Rip Rogers?
He's just an old school wrestling trainer. He trained a lot of people. He worked at OVW for a long time.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, I remember watching him when I was a kid, but he was a jobber.
Yeah.
You know? So he puts it out, and then Randy Orton retweets it. So Randy Orton didn't even write what was in it. He just retweeted it, and he caught all the shit for it. And they kind of went back and forth. I mean, he went back and forth with a lot of people. One was Will Ospreay because, you know, Will Ospreay does a ton of flippy shit. But the thing was, it was just like, just back to my point, so I don't go on too much. This was Randy being Randy, and that is why the promo worked. Every word that came out of his mouth, he believed.
Oh, yeah, dude, that's such a good point, man. That's such a good point.
I honestly, me and my friend were talking about online today. I was like, I'm pretty sure he wrote that. I'm pretty sure he wrote that. Because pretty much, you know, they wrote him off TV for a while, and this was like his opus, him announcing that he's back. So it had to be big, you know? And, like, especially if they're going to push him into the main event or something like that, it had to be big. And, you know, he's been off for a few weeks. I think he wrote it. I think he practiced it. And I think he delivered it perfectly.
I couldn't agree more. That's absolutely awesome. I did not think of it that way. I was just looking at it. I was just scratching the surface on my thoughts about it, but that makes so much sense because I remember when all that stuff happened with the indie stuff, but I did not put all that together. So that's really cool, man. Do you remember after all that stuff came out? Did you ever see the clip of that indie match where I think the Young Bucks were involved, but I'm not 100%, but basically, I'm pretty sure it was the Young Bucks. They switched, anytime they were supposed to do super kicks for this match, they switched it up and did RKOs. Have you seen that?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Was that the Young Bucks?
I don't know if it was the Young Bucks. I don't remember. I just remember the clip. And they just kept doing RKOs. And then one did like a top rope RKO. And then one did like a jumping, did the springboard RKO. It was just a bunch of RKOs. And it was just, And then, you know, it was just a bunch of, it was basically a big middle finger to Randy Orton.
Yeah.
Even though, I still point out, Randy Orton wasn't the person that wrote the tweet.
Right, right. He just retweeted it. Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
They went after the famous guy.
One thing that I forgot to, yeah, they did go after the famous guy because I didn't even know who Rip Rogers was. So, I mean, they probably just, they just blamed it all on the guy that they did know, huh?
Yeah.
One thing that we kind of forgot to mention at the beginning of the show is we're trying something new, with the SmackDown review this week. It's something that we've kind of, that I've kind of been thinking about doing for Raw and SmackDown, for a while now, but we decided to finally try it today. Since we're a day late on our SmackDown review anyway, I just thought we would try something new. And that is, instead of going through SmackDown bit by bit, we'll just go in order of things that happened, of like the things that we want to talk about.
Okay.
So like, for instance, I'm going to jump on this, Rusev versus Andrade Cien Almas, match and talk about it, talk about the ending, talk about, what it's going to lead into and stuff like that. But before this match, there was actually a big review on, the all women's pay-per-view, but we're just going to skip across that and we're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about it at a later time. Maybe this episode, maybe next time, but we're going to have a full-on, me and you are going to have a full-on discussion about that at a different time. Is that cool with you?
It's cool with me.
Sweet, man. So next thing I want to talk about is Rusev versus Andrade Cien Almas. Andrade Cien Almas went over by pin in a little over 9 minutes, and 411 Mania gave it 2.75 stars. I want to read these two sentences that talk about the ending of the match and what 411 Mania thought about the match, and then I want to get your take on it. All right.
All right.
So this paragraph that I'm skipping over where they describe the match, which I thought was a great match, and it goes to Lana and Selena Vega argue, and now they are brawling on the floor. English arrives and Vega runs him into Lana, shades of Savage and Hogan. Almas now hits the hammerlock DDT off the distraction and picks up the win against Rusev. Then talking about in reference to the entire match, 411 Mania said this was a pretty good match with Almas getting a win that he needed and seemingly setting up Rusev versus English. Good stuff overall. I'd love to see Rusev and Almas get a solid 15 minutes on pay-per-view down the line. Lots of potential there. So what'd you think of the match? What'd you think of the finish? What did you think of all of this?
I thought the match was good. Almas is literally one of the best workers in the world. Rusev is underrated, so he can definitely put on good matches. So I didn't know how they were going to go at the end, and then it made sense how they ended it, because it seems like you're trying to break up Rusev Day, which, in my opinion, it's hot and it makes no sense to break up.
Exactly,
but
I agree.
To some people, you know, they just like Rusev doesn't need Aiden, but it's like, I don't think it comes down to need, but the match was good. The nitpicky part is like when Rusev was turned around, distracted, I would have liked to see Andrade like throw his throat across the rope and then wrap him up for the DDT, because just to grab him and DDT him just seemed like, you know, you're not trying to make it too realistic. You're not trying to make it too much of a shoot, but it just seemed like, hey, you just grabbed my arm. You're about to do a move on me. I would try to move or something. You know what I mean? But if you kind of throw him against the rope, it just adds a little bit more to the credibility of the move. Like I said, it's just being nitpicky. Zelina and Lana, I'm looking forward to that matchup. So I'm thinking this leads to a mixed tag at either maybe not SummerSlam or maybe the next pay-per-view after SummerSlam. So I'm looking forward to their dynamic, because I'm a big Zelina Vega fan. Most people don't know. She is a really, really, really good wrestler. She actually played AJ Lee. She was the wrestler AJ Lee in that Paige movie that's coming up. And so she's worked everywhere. I believe her name was Sarita in TNA. So she's a really good worker. So I think she could carry Lana through a good match.
So what if she's such a good wrestler, and I'm not trying to say, oh, she's you know, if she was so good, why is she doing this? That's not what I'm saying. But since she's such a good wrestler, why do they, is she working house shows or what? Why did they have her in a strictly non-wrestling role with Andrade Cien Almas? And don't get me wrong, I know it's working and it's absolutely fabulous. I'm just curious if they have, if she's got so much in-ring potential, you would think that they would capitalize on that in some way.
Yes, well, Andrade, her name was Rosita, and not Serena.
Okay.
All right, so Andrade is horrible on the mic. So, literally, it was like they were running out of things to do with him, and they realized how good she was on the mic, so they put them together. And it ended up being gold. So, it's like you're making money, you're in the group. I mean, like, when I went to WrestleMania this year, she was one of the VIP signings. That's how big that act got. So, honestly, I think they're just going, you know, with it. And, you know, when they were doing the main event matches, she would always do that her Karana off and then throw the head into the stairs. She's a lucha-style high flyer type thing. So I think they're going to work her in the ring more as we go. But it's just, you're just really good at this. It's like Aiden English is a good wrestler, you know. He's a good wrestler, but when you can get over by coming out and singing Rusev every day, you know, Rusev Day, you know.
Yeah, take why not? Check. Why not capitalize it on it, right?
Yeah, my body's not getting beat up, and I'm still making money.
What do you think about the possibility of Rusev and Aiden English splitting up and feuding, and what would the aftermath of a English Rusev feud be?
I think it's a Damian Sandow situation. I think it'll be interesting when it's happening, and then after it's over, they'll be like, Aiden English, we have nothing for you. And he'll end up either on main event or just, like, he'll be on the show and be like, 3 months later, Aiden English still works here? Every time they have those type of characters, that's what happens. They never have a next step for the smaller person in the role.
I agree. I think it's so dumb. It is so hot right now, and I understand that some people's philosophy is if it's hot, you don't want to wait too long till it gets stale. But, man, like, they waited too long to capitalize on this. They could have played this for so much more. You know, Rusev could have had a world title run in the midst of all this Rusev Day stuff. And then,
no, he definitely should have at least won the U.S. title.
Yeah, you know what I mean? What would that have been, his third reign? He should have had another reign with it. They should have done something more. It's shameful that they didn't. That's WWE for him, for you, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like, you have so much talent. You really do. You have so much talent that, you know, somebody's got to be getting pushed. Somebody has to go down. So, of course, you can't always capitalize on everything to the height of their ability, because someone would have to, you know, take a step back. That's right. Just how the WWE works. Like I said, that's why I always have been in favor of a faction system, just because that does keep, you know, everybody has a role, and you don't have to be down on the card just because you lost.
Yeah.
You know, you're sticking with your group.
So I agree.
In this case, what it is everybody's just hanging up for the top. So there's only so many spots at the top. So we can't, AJ Styles is amazing, Samoa Joe is hot, this person's hot, we want to really push Shinsuke and Jeff. Where does Rusev go? He's stuck in the middle. So of course they're going to put him in this feud with Aiden English to just give him something to do, but it's going to probably elevate Rusev, and then you're just going to be like, what did we do with Aiden English? You're probably going to force him in a tag team with somebody, or he's just going to go away.
True. Very true. And it's a shame, because Aiden English is a badass, dude. I love him. I love him. He's got a rare talent in being able to sing like that. He's built like a brick shit house. You know, he's a phenomenal wrestler. He does great character work. I mean, dude, he's got just about everything. I'm pretty sure that he's either engaged or married into wrestling royalty as well. He
was with Shaw for a long time,
which is Eddie Guerrero's daughter, right?
Yeah. She's done work for World Class, so I don't know if they're still together or not.
Right. Anyway, so next we see, next thing I want to talk about is we see Asuka versus Billie Kay. The match went 1:45. 411 Mania said that Asuka picks up a much-needed rehab win after her horrible program with Carmella.
I completely agree with
that. That's what I was going to ask, if you agreed with that or if you thought that it was kind of pointless to have a, you know, a 1:45 match with someone like this.
I think every match should be like 5 minutes, but in this case, Asuka needed, she needs to be reestablished as a bad. So I think she needs to go through the lower level people on SmackDown for a couple months, reestablish her as a badass, and then, you know, hopefully give her a big spot at the Evolution show.
They have just ruined Asuka's character. They have, man. They've just trampled. I'm not saying it's ruined forever, but I mean, she just lost that mystique. Yeah. You know what I mean? She still had it after she lost to Charlotte. I'm not saying you can't. They fucked it up so bad. What's your take on that?
It's the thing with WWE. They can make anybody hot again. I mean, they did it with the B team. You know, you just win several weeks in a row. Asuka wins several weeks in a row and, you know, put her back in the title picture if they want to do that. I just don't think Vince McMahon gets her character. So, and when the person that's saying who wins and loses doesn't get your character, you're kind of screwed.
True. Very true.
Yeah. So, I mean, because her character is Ronda's character.
Yeah. That's
so
true.
So you're kind of running into it. They're the same person. Mm-hmm. They're the unbeatable badass.
Right.
So, it's like, well, if we push Asuka that hard and say she can't be beaten, well, we're also pushing Ronda that hard and saying she can't be beaten. So Asuka is unfortunate because everybody, you know, of course, a lot of people's like, she's getting buried. Well, she's kind of getting buried for a reason because they're pushing Ronda as what Asuka is supposed to be.
Well, with them being on separate shows, could they push them in a similar fashion and then somehow bring them together for a big match at WrestleMania next year?
Me personally, I think that's what they're kind of doing with Charlotte, but I think it would be okay. But you see, Alexa Bliss and Carmella are pretty much the same character, and a lot of people in the fan base are bitching about that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of in this situation, it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Right.
But I mean, like I said, I mean, personally, I would have liked deal with the Asuka. I would have done more with the Asuka and James Ellsworth situation, and I would have had Asuka, you know, James Ellsworth, like, viciously attack Asuka or whatever, mm-hmm. like, actually try to hurt her to build up a match of man versus woman at SummerSlam, Asuka versus James Ellsworth, and then they have a match, and Asuka completely destroys James Ellsworth, and then he gets fired on SmackDown. Use him to elevate Asuka and keep her. She's such a badass, she only can fight men, type of thing.
I dig it. Speaking of James Ellsworth, we're going to talk about him right now. So we see Paige come out, and she brings out AJ Styles, and they had been pushing this all throughout SmackDown leading up to this point, and it's unveiling the SummerSlam opponent of AJ Styles, basically the number one contender for the world title. And as Paige is about to announce who it is, James Ellsworth comes out, and he says that he wants a match with AJ. He's already beaten AJ. He said a couple of times, it's three to be exact. If you don't believe me, you can look on James Ellsworth's Twitter. That's one thing I love about James Ellsworth is he's got it right there on his Twitter. He's got three wins over AJ Styles, like it's in the bio. My question is, James Ellsworth gets fired, and it's pretty funny because Paige walks out with him. She has him carried by security officials, and he's carried to the door, and he's put down right inside the building at the door, and she literally kicks his ass out, like physically. Do you think that James Ellsworth is gone, or is he going to show up again?
I think he's gonna show up at SummerSlam.
Think so?
Yeah, but you know, it's one of those things. Like StarCast is the convention that goes with All In,
uh-huh.
and he's still booked for that. He's still on that. So it might be them trying to separate themselves before then, not trying to get him extra publicity, or since they are doing the women's the Evolution show, maybe they're trying to say Carmella shouldn't have to rely on a man to win. So that's why they wrote him off. I've heard a lot of those different things. My thing is I think he should come back, maybe interfere and then leave or whatever, and then go away that way. I didn't like how it was done. It seemed abrupt.
You talking about the Ellsworth firing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think that it felt abrupt, and that's what made me think that this is probably not the end. Because if it's a simple angle or storyline, it's not a big deal. But if it was the actual firing, I would be a little worried. Like, what the hell are y'all doing? That seems like you put no thought in that at all.
I was going to say, did someone call in charges on James Ellsworth?
Right?
It just seemed really abrupt.
Right. Yeah, I totally get that. I totally agree. So we go back to the ring after James Ellsworth is kicked out, and you hear a change in the noise in the crowd, so they cut to the ring, and we miss the first punch, but Samoa Joe attacks AJ Styles from behind and gives a good ass whooping to him. Paige talks to Samoa Joe backstage a little bit later, and before he left the ring, I forgot, Samoa Joe signed it. And Paige confirmed it in their conversation behind. So it's going to be Samoa Joe versus AJ Styles. First thing I want to say is I wish that Paige wouldn't have confirmed that it was Samoa Joe. I wish she would have been like, oh, it was supposed to be somebody else. Not reveal who it was, just, he had a different opponent. Now we're going to have to push that back a month, and just say that the only reason you get this match, Samoa Joe, is because you signed the contract when I wasn't out there. Like, I think that would be a cool storyline. What do you think?
That would have been great. That's where I thought it was going.
Same here. Same here.
I thought it was going to be like somebody got screwed out of their title. Maybe Daniel Bryan. I picked Daniel Bryan, but, he signed his name in the contract, so he gets the match. But I think they're doing what they're going SmackDown and Raw, how they're doing different. Is Paige is the GM that knows what she's doing.
Yeah, I agree.
As opposed to Kurt Angle's the GM that can't control shit.
I love it, man. I absolutely love it.
But which is cool, because that's a great way to do it. I mean, you want it to be seem different. You want it to be like the shows are run differently. But yeah, it just seems like I said, it's like they're trying to establish that Paige is a boss.
Right.
And Kurt Angle is, Stephanie's bitch, if you want to put it that way.
I get that. And I like that. I like that, you don't have two awesome GMs. You got one that's prospering and one that is really struggling to keep his show together to answer
like he's
to
just
his boss.
Waiting to get fired.
Exactly. Exactly. I really like it. I guess now's a good time to talk. No, I was going to say let's talk about Evolution because AJ mentioned it and said that, he could tell his daughter that she can do anything she wants. But I'm second guessing it. I want to go ahead and hold off, and I want to talk about that separately. Maybe tomorrow or something if you're available, or sometime later in the week or something like that. But next, we see Carmella and Paige talking backstage, and the deal is that Carmella and Becky Lynch have to have a match, and it's a non-title match. If Becky Lynch wins, then she gets a title shot against Carmella at SummerSlam. Becky does in fact beat Carmella. It was a good match. It took about it went just over 7 minutes. But my question is more along the lines of, do you think this is Becky's time at SummerSlam? Is she finally going to knock off Carmella? And let's say that she, hypothetically, let's say that Becky does win. If you look back at Carmella's reign as SmackDown Women's Champion from beginning to end, would you call it a success?
Yes, because she did everything she was supposed to do. She gave Charlotte the time off that she needed to have the surgery that she needed. She was a heel She was a strong heel. She was good on the mic. People hate her. It's just she was a placeholder champion until, you know, maybe it'll be Becky. I honestly think would be the same thing, because I think ultimately the job is to get the belt back on Charlotte for a while.
I got you. So do you think that Becky wins at SummerSlam?
I've been going back and forth and back and forth on this. Personally, I mean, yeah. And the only reason I'm saying that is that maybe they're trying to do Becky and Charlotte at the Evolution show, because have two of the horsewomen against each other.
Right.
That would be a good match. I don't know. Honestly, it's like, you want your, Evolution, I think, is going to be one of those shows you want your best performers there, and that's not Carmella.
Oh, okay.
I mean, she's serviceable, you know.
In ring wise, okay. Right?
Yeah, in ring wise. But you're gonna, you know, you're gonna be trying to put on your best matches.
Yeah.
And if you want to do that, you want your best workers to be in the positions of having the title.
Yeah, for sure. I get that. I love Carmella's character work, but I would say that in a lot of instances in the ring, there's a lot left to be desired. But let's talk about Charlotte for a minute. And my question is, if she wins the title, do you know how many world title reigns she's got so far?
I think she's at 5.
Okay, do you think that the goal is for her to have a large amount of world title wins similar to her father? Like, do you think that she's going to be like a 12-time or 16-time world champion when it's all said and done?
I think she'll get to 10.
Okay. So you think, because the most is the most right now, 7 with Trish?
Yeah, with Trish.
You know,
yeah.
if you're not discounting like the 10-year long reign by not Mae Young, but the Fabulous Moolah and all that.
Yeah, 28 years, yeah.
28 years, yeah. But that, I mean, that was a completely different time. I don't even know if that's, is that fully recognized by the WWE?
Yes.
It is recognized, okay.
Well, I mean, it's as recognized as it's going to be, because they won't talk about it anymore.
Yeah, true that, true that.
Yeah, yeah. But Fabulous Moolah does not have the great. Yeah, she's been 4-time Raw champion, 1-time SmackDown champion. So she's 5-time champion.
Got you, got you. I really think that they're my theory is that they're building Charlotte up, and she's going to be like pretty soon she's going to, you know, be talking a lot about her the amount of world title reigns. You know, in kind of like in the shadow of her dad, not in a negative way, like, you know, she's going to be like, who are you talking to? I'm the queen. I'm a 9-time world champion. You know what I mean? And that,
yeah,
like, to strike fear, you know, in her opponent. And I fucking think that that's awesome. You know,
she doesn't have to, I was going to say, she doesn't have many more to go.
No, she really doesn't. And she's already 5.
She's at 5. So,
yeah.
2 more and she's at the record. 1 more she catches Mickey, who's at 6.
Yeah, yeah. Mickey is 5-time world and 1-time Divas, which is Divas Championship is a world title. I was just,
yeah. Do you know Sasha's been the champion? We're all champion 4 times.
Yeah, yeah. I the reason I remember that is because it seemed like around that time that they had that no DQ match or false count anywhere match when Sasha put the bank statement or whatever, put the cross face on Charlotte through the handrails. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yes.
In that little time frame right there, they bounced that title back and forth like 2 or 3 times a piece, if you remember, or at least twice
they
a piece.
Did. Yeah,
and so I remember when she won her 4th title, and I don't think out of those has she ever successfully defended
the
title.
That's her story, is that she has never successfully defended the title.
That's crazy. So that's what kind of made me think like maybe they're trying to build up the amount of world title reigns for Charlotte by doing that. Which I want to state, you know, so no one I don't want anyone to write in saying, you know, hey, you know, like, I think it's a good storyline. I agree with you. I think it's a great storyline. I was just saying that that's my theory.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good storyline, too. I just, to me, I feel like they need a nice, long women's champion. And I think we're about to get it. I mean, in my opinion, I think we're about to get it. But I think they need someone to hold the belt for a while and establish themselves as dominant. So when there's a title change, it actually makes sense. It actually makes an impact.
I dig it. Next thing I want to talk is the SmackDown Tag Team Tournament, which is, it's a tournament that... is for the number one contendership of the SmackDown Tag Team titles, which is held by the Bludgeon Brothers right now. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct.
And there's four teams in the tournament: the New Day, Sanity, the Usos, and is it Team Hell No?
It's the Bar.
The Bar, that's right. They came out at the... Yeah. I forgot about that. Did they say anything about this tournament during the show? Because I don't remember them talking about it.
No, I mean, this was all set up on Twitter. She announced it on Twitter. She announced the teams on Twitter. And they pretty much... they went un-WWE. They didn't drive home the fact and have her re-announce it. They just went into the matches. And on commentary, they just said, okay, she announced this on Twitter. And just kept... They went with it.
Wow. Well, that's different.
I don't do that very often.
Yeah, no, they don't. It's different. I'd kind of dig it, though, to be honest with you. Like, just something different. You know what I mean? I never try on something different, that's for sure. Or not the WWE, anyway. Just because they put out so much content and stuff. Like, you got to kind of take chances like that, you know?
Yeah.
So we see the New Day defeat Sanity. It takes them 7.5 minutes. 411 Mania gave it 2.5 stars. So
yeah, it was a shitty tag team match.
So this is that's what I was about to ask you, because this is what 411 Mania said. They had one sentence to describe the whole thing. They said, what we got was solid, gutted by a commercial and an overbooked ending. Would you agree with that, or do you think more along the lines of the whole thing was shit?
No, it went to a commercial and they did the split screen thing. And it was just like, it wasn't tag team wrestling. It wasn't, they didn't, you know, no one got worked, you know, it wasn't, there was no hot tag. I mean, it was just wasn't tag team wrestling to me. It was like disjointed, and then, oh, okay, they used to call it the Midnight Hour, but now they call it the Up, Up, Down, Down, because, you know, you got a brand. And they hit that move, and then it was over, and it was just like, okay. They were very beatable very quickly. It wasn't much to it. It was just like, oh, it's over?
Right. Yeah, I,
It's just like, again, I understand SmackDown's 2 hours. They don't have time to do everything. It's like, it just feels like this show should have been about, there's about two segments they could have left out. And, you know, like Asuka and Billy. They didn't need that, you know.
Right, right.
They need Asuka to win, but you could have put that on another show. They had a Samoa Joe and Truth match. You take those two matches and actually give the New Day Insanity time, you know.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times when people look at matches, when we look at a match 3 weeks from now, it's not going to be a big deal about who went over and who didn't go over, because we know it's, you know, we know it's choreographed, it's staged. But if you put on, but if the match is like 3 minutes, then, or 7 minutes in this case, you know, we're more apt to be like, oh, well, the New Day, you know, whoops Sanity's ass for no reason. If they went 16 minutes and had a phenomenal match, we wouldn't really care that Sanity lost. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, because you got to build up the fact that Sanity wants to be the champions. You know, you have to build up that this matters to them.
Right.
And I don't think the match did that. I mean, and the match made me think, does this even matter to the SmackDown? Because they weren't given any time to do the match.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Anyway, so after that, we see the Bar come out. So the Bar has not been on SmackDown for a while. Do you have any idea where they are? Where they been? Were they just doing dark matches? Were they taking time off?
This is a joke. I mean, a lot of people thought this was a joke. They got the World Cup off.
Do what now?
They got the World Cup off.
How did they do that?
I mean, basically, they had, you know, they had the bludgeons and they had a program. They weren't really needed, and they basically gave them a month off. Apparently, Sheamus had been dealing with some neck stuff, so they were letting him heal. And Cesaro was like, "I'm cool, not working."
Wow. Yeah. I know that he suffers from spinal stenosis, which is a thing that I think Stone Cold also suffered from. And some people say that at times, Sheamus talks about how he's just holding on as long as he can, meaning that he seems to at times to be in a lot of pain. So yeah. I hope that those reports are over exaggerated, because I absolutely love Sheamus. I really didn't appreciate his character and his work too much up until he got with the Bar, and I think he's right where he belongs in a dominant tag team. I don't think, in my opinion, he doesn't have any business being the world champion. I don't like his individual work, but, you know, teach their own.
I mean, the dude is, like, he has that Celtic warrior workouts thing, and he does that, and he's amazing at that. He's very personable. I love Sheamus. As far as in the tag team with the Bar, I'm like you. I didn't like him too much as a singles competitor. I used to compare him to Roman Reigns. He's great in small doses, and that's what you get with him in the tag team.
Right. Yeah, I dig that. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, he gets the hot tag, and he comes in, does his moves, and, you know, and it looks good, and I actually dig it. So, and he was like, "Yeah, we got the World Cup off." It was funny Cesaro said that, and a lot of people thought he was joking, but I knew Sheamus needed some time, and, you know, Cesaro took some too.
I like it. I like it. So SmackDown ends with some promo work and some promotion of Miz and Mrs. by The Miz and Maurice, and The Miz is holding his baby out there. Eventually, Daniel Bryan comes out, and I do believe that it was found out to be not really a baby, correct? Like, it was a doll.
He threw the baby at Daniel Bryan, and Daniel Bryan, like, panics, and then we realize it was a doll.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty funny myself, and it progresses, or it actually starts, now it progresses. I was going to say it really brings it to light, but that's happened over the last couple weeks with Team Hell No being on Miz TV and stuff. But the storyline between Daniel Bryan and The Miz has progressed. Do you think that this storyline is going to be successful, and do you think they're going to have some great matches with their styles being, I wouldn't say opposite, but very dissimilar?
It is absolute. They're going to absolutely have a great time. They're both amazing on the mic, and they can sell it, and they have the passion that they need to. And this is one time the Miz's safe working style actually works to their advantage, because he doesn't have a lot of moves where he drops you on your head.
Right.
So his safe working style is going to definitely make Daniel Bryan look good, and Daniel Bryan's has an exciting work style that he'll take the beating for like 20, 30 to whatever, and then, you know, do the exciting yes, yes chant and come back. And I just think they're going to tell an amazing story.
I like it. I absolutely like it. That ends SmackDown, and that's about everything that we was going to talk about on SmackDown. Man, we've already gone an hour. So instead of talking about all three of the first days on the G1 special, how about, what's up?
I was going to say, I can give you the best matches if you would like.
That's what I was going to say, is why don't you give us the best matches from each of the first three nights. Right. And real quick, I want to mention this before you do that. The first night, which is A Block, because I haven't watched the first three nights. I've got to go, well, I watched a match or two, so I got to go back and watch some of them. So I'm hoping, I'm going to kind of go off of what you tell me right now, because, but the first night, which is A Block, sees Switchblade Jay White versus Kazuchika Okada, and then you see Tanahashi versus Minoru Suzuki, and then you see Michael Elgin versus Evil, Big Mike, and you see Hangman Page versus Bad Luck Fale. Now, I said those in backwards order. It started with Hangman Page and Bad Luck Fale, but that is a stacked day. Are most days in this tournament like that?
The first 2 days were, of course, built to, you know, bring everybody in and get them excited, so they set those up.
Gotcha.
And and then you'll get random days, and then of course the last day or the last 2 days are set up with great matches. I think like Omega and Ibushi are near the end, I believe.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm bringing up my notes real quick. Hold on, just a second. Because just to throw this out there, if you follow Around the Ring okay on Facebook, at the end of each day of the G1, I give a spoiler-free match rating. So you can I'm usually watching them live. You know, but as soon as I'm done, I put my spoiler-free match ratings on there. And it's a 1 through 5, Sicily Poor, Don't Waste Your Time. 2 is two is fair. It's like, it wasn't very good, but it just wasn't horrible. 3 is good. I mean, 3 means it was a good match. You know, it wasn't like, it was, 3 is kind of my average. 4 is great, and 5 is perfect. So, you know, I don't just throw around 5s. I know a lot of people love the 5s, but I don't throw it around unless I mean it.
I got you.
I mean it. And so I was kind of giving you a breakdown of what you're about to get here, because I am back almost to the 14th. Hold on. I'm scrolling down. I'm scrolling down on the club because I tweet too much. So I tweet after each match. Don't follow me on Twitter if you don't want to be spoiled.
I dig it. So you don't do the 24-hour period. You just you live tweet all the time when it comes to the G1 climax?
On Twitter. I don't put it on Facebook. So you can go Facebook and be spoiler-free. My Twitter is not spoiler-free because I am literally posting what I think as it happens. So it's okay. But that first night we had Evil and Elgin, right?
Yeah.
Elgin is one of my favorite wrestlers. So, I mean, I know some people might have some kind of opinions about him outside of the ring, but my whole thought process is based on him inside of the ring. And inside of the ring, he is one of the best workers. Because on the nights where most people will, most people will kind of phone it in. It's like, oh, I'm wrestling Evil. I'm going to phone it in. Mike still gives you, like, a show. I think this match got like a 3.5 from me, and it was just a really that was probably my favorite match of the first night.
Right.
But I'm trying to waiting until let's see, hold on just a second, trying to get there. This is annoying because for some reason my computer, which never goes slow, is scrolling slow, which is it never goes slow because, you know, this is kind of what I do for a living, is I work on computers. So I'm always updating, deleting stuff, and all the ways, some things like that to try to keep it going. But that first night, the Elgin Evil match was probably my match of the night. They had, what was the other matches? We live in a meme world.
You do a lot of retweeting on memes. Is that what you're looking at a lot of right now?
No, it was just it's just a lot of like the people that are admins on my page. I just give free reign, and we get a few memes, and actually it was like yeah.
Now, is this the page you're talking about? Is this the club on Facebook?
No, this is Around the Ring.
Around the Ring on Twitter or on Facebook?
This is Around the Ring on Facebook.
Okay, Around the Ring on Facebook.
Things that we post on Facebook go to Twitter. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, it does automatically go. You got it set up?
Yeah, I got it set up where it automatically goes to Twitter. And that's good. But my Twitter does not automatically go to my Facebook.
Gotcha.
That is why my Twitter has spoilers, and I'll be gladly tell you that. But my Facebook does not, because basically that's how I chose, just because so it can put everything out there so everyone can see.
I got you.
I want you to have the option, because some people want to know who won, and that's all they want. They just like, hey, I just want to know who won. This is quite frustrating. it's usually right there. I post the start times, and I put Central Eastern Standard Time. I get it all out there for you, because that's important to me, is to make sure everyone that doesn't necessarily follow New Japan has a guide to follow whatever they, you know, they have a way to follow it if they want to. And so I try to put this information out there. So, all right, so we're finally here in my spoiler-free reviews. And this is A Block Night 1 is where we're at. And, okay, so I gave Evil and Elgin, I gave a 3.5-star match. It was a really good match. Elgin really throws out there, but the main event was Jay White versus Okada, and I gave that match 4 stars. Basically, Jay White is playing in everything. He's playing an 80s heel, and you know, Okada is down on his luck because he's lost a few matches in a row, and Jay White is the aggressor in this match, and he ends up winning by devious means, and he hits his Blade Runner. I gave that match an actual 4 stars. I've seen people give that match either. I've seen people that don't like all the character work, and they giving it a 3, and I've seen up to like a 4.5 on it, just depending on it if you like the character work.
Wow.
To me, wrestling is your in-ring and your character. You have to be both. So I would like, you can have the most excellent match ever, and if I don't feel like you told a good story, and I don't feel like who you are as a person came out in the match, to me you're just performing moves. So, like Omega and Naito, I was like a couple weeks ago, I realized, like, I've always had a problem that I don't understand Kenny Omega's character.
Okay.
I didn't understand it. So I was sitting there looking at it, and they were calling his moves out, and he said, "You cannot escape." And he was like, so I watched Up, Up, Down, Down. I was like, that was from Street Fighter. And then I realized what Kenny Omega's character is. Kenny Omega is a video game or a Street Fighter character come to life.
Right.
I didn't get that. I mean, I know some people that's fucking obvious. It took me forever to get that. So, like, it finally, once I got it, I was like, it was that. Oh, that's what he was. Okay, now I get it. So, so shocker of the night, on the first night of Block B, on the second night of the G1 overall, Kenny Omega and Naito got the best match of the night, and they put on a 4.75. I didn't quite give it a 5. I don't think it was perfect, but it was damn near perfect. To me, when a match is 5 stars, at the end of the match, you're like, that's 5 stars.
Yeah.
You don't
have to think about it.
You don't question it. And
gotcha.
I questioned it. So I gave it a 4.75. It was a great, it was just a great match. If you like the old school WCW run-in stuff, Tama Tonga and Juice put on any Tama Tonga match, because there's been a lot of run-ins in the Tama Tonga matches, I think every match. So if you like that old school WCW NWO style, that is definitely in it. If you want another good match from that night, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Ibushi, I had that at 3.5. But on that night, I mean, the first night of the B block, you should watch every match, because they give you 5 matches. The lowest I gave was 3.25, and the highest I gave was 4.75.
I dig it. But
quality matches that night.
And that's night 2 on B block.
Night 2, first night of Block B.
Gotcha.
All right. And then on night 3, and this will be the second night of the A block. Michael Elgin and Adam Page, and Jay White and Tanahashi, both I gave 4 stars, so it was a tie for match of the night. But honestly, if you're asking me which match that I enjoyed the most, it was definitely Michael Elgin and Adam Page. I think if I had to suggest, if you said, man, I got time, I don't have a lot of time in my life, I only can watch one match from each night, I'm telling you, Elgin versus Page. It was a great match. I gave it a 4. You know what? Honestly, going back, I'm probably got it at like, I would probably be like 4.25, 4.5. Because I just like, just personal, I just really enjoyed that match tonight, and they knocked the hell out of each other. So those are your matches for first 3 nights. So we got Okada versus Jay White. We have from night one. Then we had Naito versus Kenny Omega from night two. And then night three, I'm suggesting Adam Page and Michael Elgin.
I love it.
Yeah, so those are your three must-watch matches from the first 3 nights of the G1. The next time we do a show, hopefully tomorrow, just depends on what I got going on, I'll give you matches of the night from the next 3 nights.
That's awesome. Can now those your star rating / notes that you're reading off of right now, can you reshare those onto your page? Can you hit on Facebook, can you just hit share?
Yeah.
And add it and just put it to the top of the Around the Ring page, and not only will I share it on today, by the time this episode posts, onto our Facebook, so people can, if they haven't already liked the Around the Ring OK Facebook page, they can like it from there, and they can see the notes if they want to look at them a little bit more, or the ratings a little more detailed.
Yeah,
and that's me included, because I've got to watch, while I'm editing, or while I'm putting together the rest of this episode right here, I'm going to put on night two, which is the first night of the B block, solely because of your recommendation just then. So I love the way that you look at matches. You don't just throw out 5 stars all the time. And I'm not saying that Meltzer does. I know some people say he does when it comes to Japanese matches. I don't personally think that. I just think that a lot of times the Japanese product is better. But I absolutely love... there's two people besides Meltzer and Keller that I put a lot of stock into their match ratings, and that's you and Rich Latta, who's a friend of mine. He works for Social Suplex Podcast Network at One Nation Radio, and he also is a columnist at Lords of Pain. So between Floyd and Rich, y'all really should, everyone out there should check out their match ratings. It's absolutely phenomenal. Floyd, man, thank you for coming on the show today. I hope to have you right back tomorrow. Why don't you tell everybody where you normally hang out during the week if you're not on this show?
All right. On Facebook, it's Around the Ring OK. That is our Facebook page. Like I said, you get daily updates on the G1 and the contest we're running as far as picking our tagline. And then Twitter.com/Around the Ring OK. That is completely spoiled. So do not get mad at me if you go on there and get spoiled, because I am telling you, I just, as I'm watching the matches, I'm giving the little shots of what I think. Like, you might even see Okada has a shitty DDT, in my opinion. A lot of people don't say anything bad about Okada, but that's my thought process. And so you'll get my thoughts through the match, and you'll get who won, you'll get how I'm doing in our pick'em, the Voices of Wrestling pick'em, and you'll get my automatic star rating at that point in time. And I generally stick with that star rating. I don't think I've changed one yet. So definitely follow me on Twitter. Our show drops every Sunday. It is Around the Ring. It's in all red letters. It is me and my new co-host, Ryan Aaron. He's gotten the torch passed from our silky Dave Brown. So I appreciate anyone that you want to listen. If you enjoy me on there, here, you'll enjoy me on there, because I try to cover, I mean, it's about 2-3 hours. I cover more because it's like I give my updated, like, per match reviews on this show. So this, I get more into the topic sides of wrestling.
I dig it, man. I absolutely dig it. Again, man, like I said, there's two people that I absolutely love reading star ratings from, and that is from you and my other boy, Rich Latta. Both of you guys are phenomenal. Floyd and Savior, your Floyd and Savior. Thank you so much for coming on the show, man. I absolutely love when we get to work together. It's absolutely phenomenal. I would probably say that the spike in listenership or the increase in listenership is probably attributed to you, my friend. Ever since you've been coming on the show, we've seen like an 8% increase in listening. So good looking at you, my friend. Good looking at you. Everyone that tunes in every single day, I just want to say I appreciate it so, so much. Me and Floyd could not do this without you. Me and Mike could not do it without you. And anybody else, Chris Spizek, anybody else that comes on the show, themselves and myself could not do it if you guys did not tune in and enjoy the show. So thank y'all very much. Hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook. You can follow me on Instagram. For everyone out there, stay strong and too sweet.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?